On November 25th, 1778, British Lieutenant Colonel Lewis Fuser sat down to write a letter to his American counterpart, Colonel John McIntosh. Fuser and his naval forces had Fort Morris, an earthenworks fort on the other side of the Medway River, surrounded. More than 500 men were poised to make a move that would, for all intents and purposes, put Fort Morris firmly in their grasp and erase the only means of protection for the town of Sunbury. Reports suggest the Americans had barely 200 men. They were outnumbered in every way. The day before, the Patriots had started opening fire on the British, but their firepower was modest and couldn't inflict any real damage to the British soldiers out on the water. The fight, it appeared, wouldn't really be much of a fight at all. But the Patriots were steeled with an unwavering resolve that it seems was a disposition that came straight from their leader, Colonel McIntosh. Colonel Fuser's wording in the letter was quite clear. He told the Patriots across the water that there are basically two ways this whole thing can end. They could choose the easy way or the hard way. Either way, they were bound to lose. They could surrender or feel the violent wrath of what the British would unleash on them. McIntosh would lay out in writing, in his reply to Fuser, that unwavering resolve that permeated his men. His reply in the simple words, "Come and take it," was a challenge. It was a dare. He wasn't going to surrender. He wasn't going to just hand over the keys to the place. McIntosh was opting, as far as Fuser was concerned, for the hard way. Welcome to the Marked Podcast. Across Georgia, there's more than 2,000 historical markers that tell the story of a person, place, or an event from our state's past. And our digital video series explores a select few of those from Georgia's revolutionary history. And in this podcast, we're expanding on that with additional voices to help bring out the stories of these markers and the context of what they tell us about our state. Hello, I am Andrew Iden, the executive producer of the Marked Project here at Georgia Public Broadcasting, and joining me today is archaeologist Dan Elliott. He's the president of the Lamar Institute and one of Georgia's leading historical archaeologists, and his work has taken him to sites across the Southeast, and he spent years researching Fort Morris, Sunbury, and the community and the people who lived there through Georgia's revolutionary era. Dan, thanks for being here.
Howdy, Andrew. Nice to be here.
Dan, before we start, I want to get a little background with a clip from our video series.
The fort is pretty simple. Behind me are what's known as earthenworks. They're all natural mounds of soil designed specifically to be a method of protection. And this is all built to protect the town of Sunbury, which today no longer exists, but was once a thriving coastal community.
Sunbury was established in 1758 and was laid out very similar to Savannah. Sunbury had 496 lots, three public squares. Sunbury was a commerce center. Its initial drive was economic and commerce with it being here on the harbor.
Now I love talking about Sunbury because it's so little known, but it was very important. It actually was the second busiest port in the colony, and it's virtually a ghost town now. I mean, you go there, you can sort of sense that there was life here.
And so before we understand Fort Morris, we have to understand Sunbury, right? So why was this place important enough to defend?
Well, Sunbury was a seaport town. It was at one point the second largest town in colonial Georgia. It was established in 1758 and went downhill quickly during the Revolutionary War period. It was burned and attacked and used by both armies. So it took a rough beating during the war. It did survive the war and continued, but was pretty well messed up by a lot of hurricanes later on in the early 1800s. And by the 1830s or so, it was pretty much on the way out.
And so where does Fort Morris fit into that story?
Well, the property that contained Sunbury and Fort Morris was granted to Mark Carr. Mark Carr had been the captain of a ranger, Marine Rangers, that were in the very earliest days of colonial Georgia patrolling the rivers. And so he gave the money, gave the land to create the town. And so it was from the onset, it probably had some sort of fortification to defend against whoever was the bad guy, the hostile Indians or the French or, but we don't know a lot about its earliest days in terms of the fortifications, but
right.
By the French and Indian War, it's being more fortified. And then by the Revolutionary War, the Americans fortified it even more. Then they were attacked and the town was the fort was conquered and the British took it over. They modified it and it changed hands. And each time the fort kept getting bigger and bigger because there were more soldiers garrisoned there.
Yeah.
So by the time the British are there just for a period from January of 1779 until September, that's when they were there. And they made it the largest fort. And so all this time that, you know, the townspeople were being either chased out, depending on which side of the fence they were on in the conflict, you know, whoever was in control there was making it uncomfortable for the townspeople. So,
right.
And then it was used as a hospital and a prison all during the Revolutionary War by different sides. And so it was particularly useful for the hospital role because there were three major campaigns by the Southern Patriot Army to attack East Florida. And all of them were failures. But in the process of all of these three, from 1776, 1777, 1778, a lot of people died, but they were dying of illness and disease. So, but they were pretty well hanging out in the area of Sunbury. And
yeah.
That's where a lot of these hospitals were for the Patriots at that time. So there's unknown, you know, cemetery somewhere out there that contains, the first campaign was the worst. And there was about the 8th Virginia Regiment lost about almost 60 people just to illness while they were hanging out at Sunbury.
This area is vital, not only when the Europeans came, but to the American Indians that were here first. And it's all because of the location. It's here on the Medway River, which is a natural deep water harbor. This was a Muscogee-speaking indigenous person's village for millennia before European contact. Some of the earliest European activity here was by Mark Carr and his son Thomas Carr. They had been granted land by King George II down around Brunswick. As time went by, Mark Carr thought the grass was a little bit greener up on this side of the river. He became displeased with Brunswick and said, up on the Medway River, there's a beautiful area. Perhaps I could trade my 500-acre grant for 500 acres up here.
Now, his plantation is actually raided in 1741 by indigenous people living in the area. So the attack on Carr's property really kind of exposes this area.
Fort Morris is probably best known for one of the most famous exchanges of the Revolutionary War, right? So walk us through what it was that actually happened.
Right. Yeah, the phrase, come and take it,
yeah.
Is, as you know, the British did. They came and took it. So it's kind of, that's my version of it, is came and took it. The British laid siege to the fort. They were a little undermanned. They didn't have quite enough oomph to pull it off. The fort was pretty ominous. You know, it had quite a few cannons in the fort, and the British were stretched a little thin. And they gave that command, you know, come. We have so many hours before we'll come in. And they said, we'll come and take it. And the British decided they'd wait for a better time. They were waiting for reinforcements to show up that weren't there yet, so they called off the battle.
We got Lewis Fuser with the British out on the water looking at Fort Morris and the folks at Fort Morris looking back. Fuser basically writes them a letter and says, we can do this the easy way or the hard way.
Sir, you cannot be ignorant that four armies are in motion to reduce this province. The resistance you can or intend to make will only bring destruction upon this country. On the contrary, if you deliver me the fort that you command, lay down your arms and remain neutral until the fate of America is determined, you shall, as well as all the inhabitants of this parish, remain in peaceable possession of your property. Your answer, which I expect in an hour's time, will determine the fate of this country, whether it is laid in ashes or remain as above proposed. P.S. Since this letter was closed, some of your people have been firing scattering shots about the line. I am to inform you that if a stop is not put to such proceedings, I shall burn a house for every shot fired.
But, you know, that rallying cry, come and take it, it's still around today, and that did show that the Patriots had spunk, but they didn't really put their money where their mouth was, you know, a couple of months after that.
Now that we've sort of laid out the backdrop of you know, Fort Morris, I'd like for you to walk us through a little bit of, like, what your research was and, you know, just what you learned about Fort Morris throughout that process of that being one of your primary archaeological sites in the early 2000s.
Okay. Well, when I first got to Sunbury and Fort Morris area, I knew it was a large town in the 18th century, but I didn't know much else beyond that. So it was a learning process for me. I kind of hit the ground running. In 2001, we got a contract to work there. The state of Georgia had funded some archaeology. And so we scrambled and kind of got, it was a case of getting the cart before the horse, because I had not had the opportunity to do the historical research to kind of learn more about what ought to be there. And we immediately started digging and learned quite a bit. And then soon after that, I wrote a grant proposal to the American Battlefield Protection Program of the National Park Service and got a grant for the battle at Sunbury. There were several things that you could call battles that happened at Sunbury, but that gave me a grant. We did a lot more historical research at that point, traveling to distant archives up in Canada and New York and California, because a lot of the records, the original records, got grabbed up by collectors, or they wound up in northern museums and libraries and that sort of thing, and they weren't in Georgia. So we had to kind of scrounge around and pull together what we could learn about that. And the ABPP report that's online, everybody can download it and read it if they want to. That's where we really got the lion's share of our historical research done. And so then I kind of, you know, was having to retrofit that into our archaeology story. And all that was done, wrapped up by about 2005. That was the last digging that I did there and the last research that I did. Since then, I keep stumbling into more stories about Sunbury, more facts. And there, you know, found out later on that there was a Captain Scallion who had a British rogue galley, and they, as they were evacuating Georgia, heading to Florida after the war was winding down, they stopped by Sunbury and set it on fire. So, you know, there, that was a late event that happened there in 1782.
I want to get to your work specifically at the Fort Morris Historic Site. So can you take me through, you know, when you and your team first arrived at Fort Morris, what was it you were looking for?
Well, there was an archaeologist named Gordon Majette who had actually done some excavation there before we got there. He had done his thesis work in 1976 and had done a few excavations around inside the fort. And so that was our backdrop of, you know, the previous work. So other than his thesis, his collections were kind of scattered around and not all that great a story to build on. But anyway, we almost came in like nobody had ever done any work there at all, and immediately did a survey, made a detailed map of the fort, and then started doing excavations and sampling areas around with smaller little test units or little shovel tests. But these larger test units, we got lucky, and everywhere we plopped a test excavation down, we found wonderful things from the fort story, and including digging down deeper than Gordon Majette had dug, and we stumbled into a whole nother layer of the fort that he wasn't aware of in 1976. So the British, when they enlarged the fort after they captured it from the Americans, they brought in a bunch of fill dirt, basically, and kind of raised up the floor level of the fort. So that was kind of neat to discover. And then we found quite a few things in the fort from the January 9th attack and when the Patriots lost the fort. And we found lots of burned gun parts and lots of exploded artillery fragments from the British bombardment. So it would have been kind of a messy, noisy place to be if you were inside the fort, because there were a lot of these hollow mortar shell fragments that were all scattered around. And that would have been really a frightening thing to have that plop into the floor of your house or dance around inside the fort and blow up and then send them. You know, it didn't take the British long to capture the fort. But
one of the things that was striking to me when we went there was sort of the simplicity. There's just, before I had gone there, I knew sort of these earthenworks and what they were. But I think, just using the word Fort Morris, right? I think a lot of people assume there's sort of these big sort of walls with, these big sort of turrets on in the corners. But when I got out of the car and I walked up on the site, I was struck at the simplicity of it. And it was, I think it was telling to me, and it reminded me of sort of the elementary way that these battles were carried out compared to now. There just wasn't. Am I right about that? Was that sophisticated for the time?
Well, it's a complicated story of the construction of that fort. And when you walk up and see that earthwork, that's a wonderful earthwork, but it's from the War of 1812, and it was never finished because the war ended. So they built the outside shell of the fort on the footprint of the earlier Revolutionary War Fort Morris, but they did a lot of tinkering, and it was greatly reduced from what Fort Morris had been. At the largest extent, when the British were there, it had quite a bit more extensive earthworks than what you see, but those were all leveled down later on, so that the fort actually got smaller looking. And that was one of the tricks, was figuring out that it was called Fort Defiance in the War of 1812. And there was a drawing made of it by an engineer, American Army engineer, but he must have had dyslexia, because he flips the fort, the mirror image, around. So when we made the map of the fort, which was the first time anybody made a really detailed map of the ruins there, it was like the opposite, like a mirror image of this engineer's drawing of the fort. So we realized that was the same fort, but he had gotten his map flipped around somehow. And so that fort that you see, it's really well preserved, but there's nothing inside of it to go along with the War of 1812, because the war ended. That's the way they left it.
So after all of that time and excavation and research, what was the story for your group? What was the story that emerged from Fort Morris?
Well, we started in Fort Morris and immediately stumbled into some wonderful Revolutionary War era deposits. Some of them were from the Patriot occupation. Others were from the British occupation. We found lots of the battle debris, so that we were able to tell a lot about the January battle story and confirm, that it was pretty much a messy place to be during the battle. And then we just learned that there was lots to the fort that we didn't know. We kept stumbling into ditch work that kept going. We did ground penetrating radar work, and we did some excavations and stumbled into areas outside of the fort that you see now that were indications that this fort was a lot bigger in the Revolutionary War period. And it got its maximum size during the British occupation, and nobody knows hardly anything about this Fort George. It was there for 6 months or so, or 9 months. And so, it was exploratory. It was early. It's very little digging that we did, I mean, relatively speaking. Most of that place is still intact. We just got lucky with where we placed our units so that we did come down on chapters of the story of Fort Morris in the ground that were pretty neat.
We've kind of hit on this theme a lot in these conversations, but you know, I think most people think of the Revolution as a Northern story, right? Things that happened up in the Northeast. But why is Fort Morris important to understanding Georgia's role in the American Revolution?
Well, the Revolutionary War in Georgia is a tale of losers. We were losers. We lost most of the battles. You know, we won one or two battles in Georgia, but for the most part, it was a losing cause for the Patriots. And, you know, you hear a lot more about the battlefields in South Carolina, like Cowpens and Kings Mountain, where they turned it around. And it were great American victories, but there's that loser part of the stories. That's kind of my old story of my life. I've always been in sports. I was lousy. You know, I always lost. And so right. I have sympathy for losers. And telling that part of the story and just the whole loyalist story in America, too, is another undertold story. Georgia's, in the Civil War, we also were losers. But there's way more emphasis on the Civil War in Georgia in the literature and in the public opinion and the public knowledge of military past. So, you know, our organization has been trying to bring to light some of these earlier events and places and put dots on a map that people can hopefully go visit. You know, some of them, the dots, in the case of Sunbury, that town is going away from development even as we speak, you know, and it's lost a lot of its original context since 2005 from housing and different development there. So, and it's not protected. So we're trying to get a little protection for some of these places that had a major role in the American, you know, as part of the theater of the American Revolution in Georgia.
Right. Well, I guess that, as far as Fort Morris is concerned, you know, why do you think it's important people know what happened there? What's sort of the lesson or the legacy of that site?
Well, it's an outdoor laboratory for kids to come and see something that looks, you know, like a part of history. And, you know, it's owned by the state, so it's protected, although that, you know, it's kind of back and forth in its history of people wanting to close it down and because low turnout, low visitorship there. It's always had a little more trouble getting, even though it's just right off the interstate, you know, 7 miles or so, it doesn't get a whole lot of visitors. And sometimes that has a big role on how money wants to be spent by the state government. So, you know, I think our work there helped keep it a state park a little longer and increase the visitorship somewhat while we were active there. But these places are, you know, the interior coastal plain of Georgia and the coast pretty well bit the dust a while back, but the interior coastal plain has a lot of military sites and a lot of settlements that we've been trying to identify these places and at least get some fraction of them preserved for the public to visit, just to see when you go to visit a historical site, you just get a connection that you can't get, you know, from reading a book or from watching a movie.
Yeah. There's something different about standing in a place where history actually happened, right?
Yeah. The maritime history there is very important too. And that's another, there was a study done after we left, where they had divers that were checking out, looking for using remote sensing equipment to look for shipwrecks and whatnot in the harbor there, and working around the wharf area, and they found some pretty interesting things. So that you don't see that on the top of the ground. There were two of these row galleys that beached. They were fleeing the British during the battle. And they beached themselves on Osabai Island, and the crew set fire to their boats so the British wouldn't get them. So somewhere there are two burn shipwrecks, you know, on Asabai Island relating to that battle. So there's a lot of things that haven't been found yet. And, you know, and there are whole forts that we still don't know exactly where they're at, you know, ones that had a lot of people die. So just in terms of being a cemetery, you know, these places where soldiers fought and died on both sides need to be recognized if we can find them and commemorated at some level.
Well, I will assume that as long as they're still out there to be found, you, Dan Elliott, and your friends and good folks at the Lamar Institute will continue to look for them. Is that correct?
Well, I just turned 71, so my digging days are winding down. But you know, I'm still active on my computer and fighting hacker. I was fighting a hacker this morning, regained control of my computer before you recall. But anyway,
well, there's always research to be done, right?
There are more things for people to discover, and lots of young whippersnapper archaeologists out there that'll take our pick up the mantle and keep running with it after we're gone.
Fort Morris is remembered for these words: "Come and take it." But the story of the site is bigger than a famous quote. It's the story of a community trying to protect itself and a state caught in the middle of a revolution, and generations of people working to preserve what remains there. More than two centuries later, Fort Morris still stands as a reminder that even places tied to defeat can help us better understand who we are and where we came from. Marked the Podcast is written and hosted by me, Andrew Iden, and produced and edited by the GPB podcast team: Jeremy Powell, Miranda Hawkins, and Mark Davenport. Additional voice work provided by Andrew Howard, and Sandy Malcolm is the Senior Vice President of Content.